Now Denise Morris and Bill Resnick are here to discuss the controversy that erupted over the Portland Public School District's banning of textbooks that present climate change denial as a legitimate scientific viewpoint.
Thank you, Tom, and I am here with Bill Resnick, who on May 16th, the May 16th Old Mole, Bill, you interviewed teacher activist Jan Zuckerman about the resolution to be presented that next day, Tuesday, May 17th. The resolution passed unanimously, and this morning we will dig into the aftermath and look more critically at the resolution. In particular, Bill, you have some really good ideas about what climate literacy could look like, but we'll try to unpack the controversy and bring to the surface some of the issues that aren't maybe being talked about, because that's what we do here on the Old Mole.
Right. You know, my position is we should really teach climate change denial, but not teach it as a scientific fact, but as the basic superstition. The same way we teach the Salem witch trials. We don't say you can't have it in textbooks. What we do say is you've got to really examine it and the craziness of it.
Right, and this is a huge part of why I think there's a lot of room for the firestorm of controversy to ignite, where there's a lot of discussion about censorship and book burning and on and on. Let me just quote a little bit from the article in Common Dreams, Bill Bigelow from Rethinking Schools, who was also part of this process and involved in the creation of the Rethinking Schools book, A People's Curriculum for the Earth, Teaching Climate Change and the Environmental Crisis. Just a little bit, it'll give us a little bit of context for the resolution. He says, in what may be the first in the nation, this week the Portland, Oregon School Board passed a sweeping climate justice resolution that commits the school district to, quote, abandon the use of any adopted text material that is found to express doubt about the severity of the climate crisis or its root in human activity. The resolution further commits the school district to develop a plan to address climate change and climate justice in all Portland public schools. The resolution makes climate literacy a priority. So this is sort of the context of the agreement, let's say. What's very interesting and important about this resolution is that it builds on the movement that was created to bring the resolution forward to make sure that, as you've mentioned, Bill, we're not just going back to find some better corporate textbook. We're actually wanting to build the community within the school system and outside of it to connect students, families, parents, teachers, et cetera, in the process of creating this new curriculum.
Yeah, it seems to me it's a wonderful first step. And particularly, it's a signal to the real censors and book burners. I mean, it's a great irony that teachers of Portland are being called book burners when, in fact, the reason these textbooks are so terrible, the publishers are not interested in climate change denial. These same publishers are publishing books on the severity of climate change and the need for action. They're doing it because the radically conservative groups, especially in Texas, where the state school board has a committee that evaluates textbooks, they look at the textbooks that are presented to them, and they cross out stuff, and they add things that they want to see, and then they tell the publishers of all textbooks, if you continue, these are draft textbooks, if you continue with this stuff, Texas will not buy them. We want something different. And so these textbooks are not because the publishers are sort of committed to these relatively bizarre and completely unscientific ideas, or there's very little evidence for them. It's because the Texas Book Commission and the others won't buy their text unless they fudge things and give climate change denial a lot of space and favorable space and call things debates, as if there's a debate between creationism and evolution. There's no debate, really. It's sort of settled scientifically. Creationism is a religious sort of belief, and it can be presented that there are people who believe that, but there's lots of evidence that's on the other side. Let's see, where are we, Denise?
Well, it's really in the context of all of the broader issues that we confront in public education. So are we looking to create good stewards of the earth and society through our public schools, or are, who's doing the real indoctrination is really what's coming to the forefront.
Yes, that's the question. And this thing by the school board is very important nationally. Because of that, it challenges the whole system now of textbook creation and how they work. And it's part of a bigger challenge of what's worth teaching, what do we want our students to learn, what should be on these innumerable tests that they're forced to take. It has repercussions in all those areas. So, of course, conservatives would just are now apoplectic that anybody would want to teach real science. Now, the question, though, is what's real science? I think that's a question for the people who are designing curriculums that they have to face.
Right. And embedded in all this, for me, is the connection between the roots of climate crisis in human activity as part of the problem, or a huge part of the problem. And that is, I think, part of what sets off alarms. Because if you connect human activity to climate crisis, then you have to admit that we could actually do something about it. And transformation is sort of a radical principle, you know, that this thing is not fateful and ordained or meant to be, that human beings could actually collaborate and create a transform themselves and the world they live in.
Yeah, well, the basis of climate change denial, it has deep roots, is people's fears of, in fact, losing their living, losing their settled sort of existence. Because climate change really, if we're going to everybody sort of knows, if we're going to stop carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gas pollution, there's going to have to be sweeping changes of the way we produce, consume, live, design cities. And those changes will be hard. And there's especially lots of companies, not just the fossil fuel companies, who will at best survive as enormously changed sort of productive things under a whole lot of rules and standards that they've never wanted to face. And that's a tremendous challenge. And there's lots of people who just don't want to have to face that, and for whom climate change denial is a convenient thing for them to say, well, it's not proven, it's not clear, the science is not, you know, there's different sides, we'll wait and see. Well, we'll wait and see what happens, which would be absolute cataclysm and catastrophe if we wait much longer.
Right. And literacy, you know, I like the language of climate literacy, because it does imply that one becomes literate, one becomes accountable. And part of that also is about becoming a critical thinker, someone with the ability to not just weigh the balance, but to weigh factors that are often in conflict or have tension, in which you come to a better solution. And the resolution is really strong in its language about using vision and creativity and science and fact and, you know, setting a bar for what and how we talk about this in our educational environments.
Right, this issue or any issue, it requires, it seems to be a very sort of sophisticated, and it's not clear to me that I think we're on our way to having it. Challenging climate change denial is a first step, but I think we have to even be more sophisticated about what we mean by science, because science is just it's a system of hypotheses. No scientist will say, I've proven this, and it's just absolute. So many times scientists have thought something, and it turns out that the hypothesis really needs to be reconsidered, and there are some more basic things that are going on, or that they might be wrong, or that the consequences of whatever these processes they are may have been exaggerated or ignored in one way or another, and by science. That science is constantly being sort of recreated based on findings. It's not a absolute. There are very few absolute findings. There are some things that we're pretty confident of. What we have to do is act upon our best science, the things that we think now are clear, and especially since the threat is so great. If the threat wasn't great, we could afford to wait and see, well, exactly what is going to happen. But the threat is immediate and great. So you take insurance out. You do things that not based on absolute certainty, but on your best estimate of what could happen if we don't act, and then we act. It's the precautionary principle that's here at stake. It's not that we're absolutely certain. It's that we're certain enough, and the stakes are so high. I mean, we buy insurance on our home, people who own homes, but people insure themselves against the worst-case scenario. You lose your home, you've lost, and you're not insured, you've lost your life. So we have to save our planetary life. We're not absolutely certain that it's true or that there won't be countervailing factors, but it's so serious, the threat, that any sane society would take the considerable sums, but appreciable sums, but not impossible. It's very, really, all the wealth and productivity is there to, in fact, insure ourselves against the worst. But, and it seems to me that's what really should be taught. Not that science is infallible and we just have to do it because science is infallible, you know. Anyway, that's my assessment of
right.
The,
but, and I think partly what you're saying is that climate literacy for young people is our insurance, and that in part is terrifying to those who are holding their stakes and holding to their livelihood, which ensures billions of dollars go in one direction and very little goes in the other. There's a lot of language about preparing kids, young people, to actually work in areas where we're making transformations happen. So it's sort of there. Like you said, it is a good start. There's a lot in there for folks to chew on, and with any luck, we won't scare our kids to death with the urgency of this all, which is also tricky, right?
Yes. Well, it's the richest of curriculums. I mean, it's so rich to look at it because so much is involved. It's so critical, and kids can understand it and study it and take action and have hope. I mean, there's so much hope of a better that alternatives to runaway climate change are actually quite wonderful if we can develop these movements that would prevail over, you know, the corporate apparatus now.
Yeah. Well, kids, put down your gadgets and get ready for some activism. That's what we say here on the Old Moles. I'm with Bill Resnick. I'm Denise Morris. We've been talking about the Portland Public Schools climate justice resolution just passed on May 17th.